Hi, this is Dana Gardner, Principal Analyst at Inner Arbor Solutions, and you're listening to Briefings Direct. Today we present a sponsored podcast discussion on making the leap from virtualization to cloud computing. We'll hammer out a typical roadmap for how to move from virtualization-enabled server, storage, and network utilization benefits to the larger class of cloud computing agility and efficiency. How should enterprise IT architects scale virtualized environments so that they can be managed for elasticity payoffs? What should be taking place in virtualized environments now to get them ready for cloud efficiencies and capabilities later? And how does services-oriented architecture, governance, and adaptive infrastructure approaches relate to this progression and roadmap from tactical virtualization to powerful and strategic cloud computing outcomes? Here to help answer these questions and to explain more about properly making the leap from virtualization to cloud computing, we're joined by two thought leaders from Hewlett-Packard. Please join me in welcoming Rebecca Lawson, Director of Worldwide Cloud Marketing at HP. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, good morning.
We're also joined by Bob Meyer. He's the Worldwide Virtualization Lead in HP's Technology Solutions Group. Welcome back, Bob.
Thanks, Dana. Hi, Rebecca.
Let's start off with looking at the market maturity. We certainly have seen an uptake in virtualization lately with the economy, people looking for efficiencies, seeking out ways of extending the infrastructure so that they can support more application data, network services. But how do we go to the next level? What should we be thinking about now? Let me take that first to you, Rebecca.
Yeah, what we're seeing is there's been an acceleration of our customers to start to get their infrastructure in order, to get it virtualized, to get it standardized, to get it automated, because they want to make the leap from being a technology provider to a service provider. So many of our customers are customers who are running an IT shop, whether it's enterprise or small or mid-size, are starting to realize, thanks to the cloud, that they have to be service-centric in their orientation. So that means, ultimately, they want to get to a place where not only is their infrastructure available as a service, but all of their applications and all of their offerings are going in that direction as well.
And Bob, just virtualizing doesn't mean your service is enabling, is it?
No, it's a good start. I mean, I couldn't agree more with Rebecca. We're seeing the same thing. You know, a couple of years ago when people were talking about virtualization, the focus was really all on the server and the hypervisor. And the real positive trend is the focus on the service. How do I take this infrastructure, my servers, my storage, my network, how do I make sure that the plumbing's right and the connectivity's right between them to be agile enough to support the business? How do I manage this in a holistic manner so that I don't have multiple management tools or, you know, disconnected pools of data that I can't, you know, drive my IT with? So I think what's really positive is that top-down service perspective that says virtualization's great, but the end point is the service. And on top of that virtualization, what do I need to do to sort of take it to the next level? And that next level for many people now they're looking at is the cloud, you know, because that is the service perspective. So in with virtualization, as Rebecca said, there's, you know, moves to standardize on hypervisors and on, you know, different platforms. And also, you know, as we've said in the past, virtualization is like the hand and automation is like the glove. They fit together. How do you scale virtualization and apply it more cost-effectively and bring in things like compliance? That's where automation comes in. So we're seeing all those things together in the notion of how do I do this for the service.
Right. Now, this strikes me as somewhat of an abstraction or perhaps a scaling. You know, virtualization, you might have a number of platforms that you'd virtualize. You'd bring more applications across them, increase your utilization. You talked about pool. But when we talk about cloud, it sounds like we're talking about more pools of pools, making that a bit more something that you could access with more automation, less complexity. In fact, the people who are managing processes might want to access these pools of resources rather than a traditional IT roadmap. But does that make sense to you, Rebecca? Are we talking about an abstraction from from virtualization and that cloud is just more of it?
Well, yeah, and that's a good question. And the funny thing is a lot of people are trying to make a link between virtualization and cloud computing. We think there is a link, but it's not just really a straight line progression. Because in cloud computing, everything is delivered as a service, and that's pretty intuitive to anybody who's used any cloud service, like just eBay, for example, or social network. It's pretty obvious. And what I think is really useful about cloud services like those that aren't necessarily, you know, they're not necessarily used inside the enterprise, but what they're doing is they're causing IT to focus on the end game, which is what, you know, which is very specifically, what are those business services that we need to have that my business owners need to use in order to move our company forward? So, for example, if you're a financial services company, focus very specifically on doing a few things well, which is maybe, you know, managing some financial instruments. And so not only are our customers starting to get successful with their virtualization strategy and build from a bottom up and get really efficient with pools of infrastructure, but they're starting to think in a more tops-down point of view to say, what is it we really need to do well? Is it provide technologies? The answer is no. They need to provide technology-enabled services, and that kind of reorients their thinking a lot. But also, you know, the scaling, I want to mention that the scaling that you think of when you think about cloud services is not really what most enterprises need to achieve, and they won't achieve it because they're managing so many different types of workloads. Naturally, every organization has to manage a lot of kinds of workloads, and so the more variation you have, the less efficient you will be. But that doesn't mean you can't work towards efficiencies, and so we're learning lessons from the big cloud service providers on how to standardize, where to standardize, how to automate, how to virtualize, and use the lessons that we're seeing from the big cloud service providers and apply them back into the enterprise IT shop. But you got to have realistic expectations, too. You're not going to get the same economies of scale as an Amazon or Google if, you know, if you're just a regular IT shop. Obviously, that's not going to be the case.
Yeah, and at the risk of oversimplifying, Bob, if we look at virtualization as a set of capabilities or progression to move through, it seems that services-oriented architecture is also important as a necessary step to be able to scale and get to cloud benefits. Is there a relationship here? Are people starting to embrace SOA as they start to virtualize, or vice versa? How does that kind of work?
Yeah, I almost see them as parallel streams because, if you go back a couple of years, people had not, again, back to the service notion, people had equated virtualization as an infrastructure thing and, SOA as an application thing and treated them sort of on different tracks. But when you take them in the notion of how do I provide those technology-enabled services that Rebecca talked about, you can start to see how the thoughts merge together. So it's not only just efficiencies in the infrastructure and the connecting and delivering that together, but you're also applying those same lessons to the application side. So they do come together when you're having a cloud conversation. And that's the interesting part about it as well. So, when people talk to us and they say, how do I leverage virtualization to get to be an efficient cloud provider? SOA eventually always comes into that conversation because you're working your way through the service stack. And that's just another part of the equation.
Right. And I think when we look to a payoff, virtualization often can help in terms of a return on investment and a total cost of ownership to a certain level when we're talking about standardization and utilization rates increasing and perhaps cutting your energy and footprint and labor costs and so forth. But
right.
If we can progress to that cloud benefit where we might be able to actually start using third-party clouds to offload certain spikes or types of character of workload, that strikes me as the real economic benefit here. Are people who are thinking about virtualization recognizing that they're setting themselves up for a much larger payoff should they make the progression to cloud computing? And let me open that up to either one of you.
I'll just open, I guess, here and say I think the cloud discussion is important because it looks at the way that you consume and deliver services, and it really does have broader implications to say, okay, now as a service provider to the business, you have options. Your option is not just that you buy all the infrastructure components, you plumb them together, you monitor them, manage them, make sure they're compliant, you deliver them. It really opens up the conversation to say, what's the most efficient way to deliver the mix of services I have? And the end result really is that there will be some that you build, manage, and manage the compliance your own, you know, the traditional way. Some of them might be outsourced to manage service providers. Some of those might be, you might source the infrastructure or the applications from a third-party provider, so that this cloud conversation really is a conversation about what's the best mix of service options for me to deliver to the business, and how do I balance, you know, the risk, the cost, and the compliance across all of those. So really, that's the crux of the conversation. It's a little bit beyond just a cloud. It becomes what's the best and most efficient way for me to provide services to the business.
We're using one of the steps between virtualization and going out and sourcing, you know, cloud services is this notion of converged infrastructure, or we've called it at HP adaptive infrastructure, and we've actually started to come out with some products that make it incredibly easy to provision and deprovision a complete infrastructure. In other words, in a box, server, storage, network, everything ready to go, automation software so that you can spin up a virtualized machine, a logical, virtual, or physical server right from a catalog that's embedded into the whole Blade system. And so the industry is starting to appreciate that we're moving from virtualization of, say, just compute to a complete converged infrastructure, and so that abstracts away so much of the complexity. And that means for IT, they can quickly, you know, serve the demand of their constituents, who are typically app dev or test or operations folks who need, you know, who need whatever they need right now, right? So we're seeing it's actually a pretty exciting time, because we're moving into this converged infrastructure, and virtualization is becoming just part of that fabric. It's almost embedded in that fabric. It's assumed that you can use a virtualized environment, and that it's not so hard anymore. And so that leads you to a place where you can make, as Bob mentioned, a smart sourcing decision to say, maybe for certain workloads, we do want to go to a third party or an outsourced cloud-based infrastructure offering, or a cloud-based service which encapsulates the infrastructure behind the application.
So perhaps one way to characterize this is that the investment you make in virtualization, adaptive infrastructure, SOA, you might get some pretty good payoffs even in the short, medium term, but you're setting yourself up, you're making investments for a much larger return, which is in that flexibility of sourcing and or finding the right fit at a granular level, at the service level, but with perhaps a underlying fabric on the providing level. Does that make sense?
It does. That's exactly right.
Yeah, it does. I was just going to say that I think from that perspective, it's really why, you know, you'll hear us at HP say time and time again that it's the service perspective that makes sense, because if you address only the pockets, you only find the pockets of savings, and it's just as likely that at some point a cost may pop up or a risk may pop up somewhere else, because you're only looking at part of the picture. When we talk about the whole notion of the service, what we're really saying is looking at the whole picture from that top-down perspective allows you to make sure that if you put out a fire, if you're saving money in some place, that you're really saving it, you're not pushing it to a different place. And that's a perspective you don't have if you're looking at just, you know, from the infrastructure or just from here's a management tool I have to choose. You sort of miss out from that perspective.
Hmm. All right, Bob. Moving back to this notion of a roadmap, what is it you need to do in order to come from virtualization as a endeavor, as an activity, with now this new emphasis on getting to the cloud? What do you start thinking? How do you shift in your mentality, perhaps?
Yeah. So you know, I could talk about it from, you know, we talk about looking at it from a top-down perspective, but there is bottom-up work to be done. really, if you look at it, I think Rebecca ticked off a lot of these at the top of the discussion. She talked about the fact from looking at standardization and how that helps, how you can really start to pool and start to source infrastructure when you standardize, because really then you start to be able to understand the implications of shifting workloads and of not, you know, losing specialty tools, really getting to a point when you standardize, you could start to get to the point of, you know, managing a single infrastructure, understanding the costs better, and really being more effective at servicing and provisioning that. So standardizing has to happen in order to get there. We talked about virtualization as another element. Virtualization, I'm not just talking about the server and a hypervisor itself. You have to really look across your infrastructure at the network server and storage and get to that level of convergence. How do I get those things to work together? You know, when I have to provision a new service, I have to provide server, storage, and network. Most people know how to do the virtualized server stuff really well right now. They tend to see bottlenecks maybe in provisioning the storage or connecting to the network. How do we get all those to flow seamlessly and in harmony? Really getting that virtualized infrastructure to click along with the physical infrastructure. And then the third or last thing we look at is, you know, from the automation perspective, is really when you're looking to source something for a service or you're looking to pool assets together, everybody will have some combination of physical and virtual infrastructure. So how do I take action when I need, you know, compute resource, be it physical or virtual? How do I know what's available? How do I know how to provision it? How do I know that to deprovision it? Or how to see if that's in compliance? All those things really only come through with automation. So from the bottom up, we look at, you know, the convergent infrastructure. We looked at, the automation capabilities and the ability to standardize across that.
And are there any examples that you have about organizations that have gotten themselves ready, so to speak, to take the next step from virtualization? What's been their experience? What may have been different for them than before, when they may have been looking at this a bit myopically?
Yeah, I think the shift really occurs when there tends to be, and I'll use virtualization sort of as the focal point. It tends to be, you know, a series of maturities with virtualization. And when most people start, you know, they start with the server and the hypervisor, and then, you know, they realize the storage and the I/O and the automation has to come with it. It's that second step when they've gone beyond a server and hypervisor approach and looked at, you know, the bigger picture and where the costs are actually being saved or pushed, that sort of the light goes on and they say, okay, there's more to it than just virtualization and a server. It really does, you really do have to look at, from an infrastructure perspective, how you manage it, holistic management, how you how you connect them together. Really, you know, when we see it done right, I don't think I've seen anybody who sort of skips that first step that's a server and hypervisor, but it really takes some time and maturity. Hopefully, you know, at HP, we can help make that progression faster because we've worked with so many companies through this progression. But really, it's moving beyond the hypervisor approach, understanding what it needs to do in the context of the service, and then looking at the bigger picture.
All right, Rebecca, a similar question to you. You know, cloud computing isn't just about providing services, it's also being able to consume them well. Is there something going on for those companies that are already thinking about cloud that they should be then thinking, how can we consume virtualized servers and services, I should say, better?
Yeah, absolutely. There's hardly a customer that I talk to that doesn't know that people in their organization are out there consuming cloud-based infrastructure services. And that may be okay, but I think most IT organizations want to be aware and help govern what actually gets consumed. And that's hard to do because You know, there's it's easy to have rogue activity going on. It's easy to have app developers or testers or even business people go out and just start using cloud services. And again, that might be okay, but there also might be problems associated with that. And so there needs to be a kind of a governing entity and supported by tools and a governance practice that says, you know, what's acceptable for the corporation and what's not acceptable. I mean, for example, you can get yourself in a lot of trouble if you are consuming, say, a service. Let's say it's a financial service, and you're using it, and you as a business person don't realize where your data lives. That could be a problem from a corporate governance point of view, because where your data resides is kind of important to a lot of organizations. Sometimes there are legal issues, and sometimes it has to do with the country that you live in. There's a lot of governance implications. And people in the lines of business don't always realize this, because that's not what their job is. Their job is to, you know, get something done, to execute a process or to get a certain result, and they don't take the time or have the wherewithal or the understanding of all the implications of using some cloud services. So, for sure, we're helping. For sure, our customers are very interested in figuring out how can they put their arms around it without seeming like they're trying to control everything, because that's, you know, gives IT kind of a bad rap when they come in with a strong arm. And there are definitely ways to do that. If IT is willing and able to step back and provide a catalog of all services that the business can access, and that might include some cloud services. Maybe you have Amazon EC2 is one of the services that you provide that's been pre-screened and it's appropriate for your particular organization, or maybe it's appropriate for some people in some countries of your organization but not others. So we think it's important. We try to encourage our customers to use the tools, the techniques, and the approach that says, you know, let's embrace all these different kinds of services, understand what they are, and help our lines of business, help, you know, our constituents make the right choice so that they're using services that are secure, that are governed, that perform to their expectations, and that don't get them into trouble.
Now, it's still early in this whole cloud discussion, and we talked earlier about this hybrid model. I think it's very early. There's not very many companies that I'm aware of anyway that are doing that, other than perhaps at a pilot level or maybe within the app dev tool side of things. But are there any examples that you're aware of, Rebecca, where that appreciation for the consumption and the governance has provided some benefits, and or what would they be? Is there anything we can measure yet? I know SOA governance is a tough one to measure.
Actually, what I'm seeing right now in customers is it's a little more of a softer measurement where, for example, I was talking to a customer who knew that there was a lot of rogue activity going on, or in their minds it was rogue because it wasn't going through IT, and they really wanted to have a way to encourage their stakeholders to use services from IT. So they decided in order to do that, they wanted to make it just as easy for app dev to secure a virtual instance from them, from IT, as easy as it was from Amazon. So they actually worked to that end. They put together about 10 different configurations that included storage and compute and network and all that stuff, and they made it available to the app developers. And what they said is, hey, you can go outside for this stuff and pay for it, or you can use ours. And by the way, if you use ours, we're going to be able to provision you just as fast, just as quickly. You know, you're inside the firewall, everything's cool. And so they, you know, that they had a kind of a pull mechanism where they made it really easy for their constituents to come and use the services that were pre-approved. And that's really, you know, the right approach. So the measurement of that is all of a sudden they had an uptick on their services because, you know, employees always want to do the right thing. And so they were, they had motivation now to go back to IT and start using the internally provisioned infrastructure. So that was a big win for them. And all they did to do that was they looked at the outside providers and looked at how, you know, what kinds of promises and SLAs and what kind of provisioning they used, and they just replicated that inside their shop. So it works really well.
Right, a service is a service. So I guess
and
another
there's no excuse not to do that these days because the tools and technologies exist to allow you to do that. And, you know, we've, at HP, we've been doing that for many years. It's not really brand new stuff. It's new to a lot of organizations that haven't used it, but we've got a lot of experience in that area. So,
of course, the benefit of doing it through your own IT department is you can go from test to dev into production with a heck of a lot more ease than if you had to bring it in from a quote-unquote rogue activity, right?
That's exactly right. And it may turn out that it may turn out that 30% of your infrastructure is actually goes out to a third party like an Amazon or EDS or some other third party. But the idea is you want a central governance of what's okay, what's the right way to go based on the value equation, not just based on the cost equation. And so that's the direction that we're steering our customers in.
Now, on this progression, on the roadmap from tactical to strategic of thinking and behaving more like a cloud provider and consumer, it seems that there's a behavioral, cultural, best practices aspect to this as well. Do those organizations that are seeking this need to plug into the roadmap something like ITIL or a shared services approach?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we're talking about a different model of acquisition, right?
Yeah, absolutely. If you look at what ITIL version 3 talks about, it's all about service strategy and the life cycle of each service. So ITIL version 3 is really important underpinning to this whole idea.
Okay.
I lost my train of thought on that one.
Sure. No, I think you finished up there. Let's
okay.
look at the future a little bit. Going out a bit further, if this cloud bursting benefit, that is to say, I can spin up instances of a runtime for an application or a data set, maybe even some network services, telephony or communication services, asynchronous communications and collaboration. If I can start to do that, I'm going to need to manage this public-private divide somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what HP is putting in place, is thinking about in terms of how to enable that. As you say, there's some of these aspects have been going on for years, but this whole notion of the hybrid, crossing those boundaries, is something a bit fresh. Perhaps you, Rebecca, or Bob can describe what we might expect, and I don't expect you to pre-announce products, but functionally what we should expect in terms of managing this hybrid capability.
Well, let me start by saying that from a tops-down approach, we encourage our customers to start immediately working on a service catalog. Because when you have a service catalog, you are forced into the right cultural, political, and behaviors that allow IT and lines of business to kind of sync up. Because you sync up around what's in the catalog. It allows you to have that discussion of what's really important and what's not important. It also allows you to ferret out, you know, where are the squeaky wheels getting attention, but maybe they shouldn't be? How can we better standardize our offerings? And all of that happens around the catalog. So the catalog drives the right kind of discussion, right? And so once you have that in place, you can start to make changes around what you do offer out to the business and, by implication, what you don't offer. Once you have a services catalog, that might have services from the cloud, it might have some internal services, some mainframe services, whatever. It's going to be a whole, you know, mixed bag. Then you can start to control, manage, and measure across that hybrid ecosystem with standard IT management tools. For example, you want to measure the performance and availability of every service, whether it's being served up from in-house or whether you're getting it from a managed service provider or whether it's a cloud service. You want to have the same performance, availability, and security metrics on every single service. And so once you're organized, when the organizing principle is the technology-enabled service, then you can be consistent. You can say, gee, this email service that we're using that's external is really performing well, so maybe we should, you know, maybe we should start to look at some other productivity services from that same vendor. You can start to make good decisions based on quantitative information about performance, availability, and security. And so what you can expect to see from HP is continuing along that line of reasoning that says, what are the right tools that IT can use to have full transparency into all of the elements of a service-level agreement, regardless of where that service comes from? because we know that services are going to come from lots of different types of delivery models, lots of different form factors and technology attributes. And so that consistent transparency from a SLA point of view is really important. And you'll see a lot more happening in that area from HP.
How about you, Bob? Looking at the future, virtualization, you mentioned standardization several times. How do we take standardization across cloud provider boundaries? Is there a neutrality or a certain set of agreements or contracts or de facto standards that you do to happen there?
Well, to go back to something that Rebecca said before, the importance of your internal processes. So a lot of people, as they talk about ITIL, they think about, you know, change management and change control. All of those elements really talk to standardization. And even with the catalog Rebecca was talking about, the catalog also enforces standard measurements, so you can really do an apples-to-apples comparison. So when you talk about standardization, it's not just standardizing on, you know, a specific type of server or a specific, you know, management tool. It's really standardizing on how you measure the services. And in order to do that, you do need certain fundamentals in place. You do need to have, you know, a service catalog is critical. People are also talking about a configuration management database or a configuration management system that holds all that information so you can get those unified views. So yes, standardized contracts, but most importantly, your measurements standardized across the, you know, whatever you agree that commonality is across the different, you know, service sourcing types. You have to come down to an apples-to-apples comparison and make sure that you're measuring and monitoring in the same way so that you can compare the values. A lot of times what we see is people have a set of measurements for management, for managed services, another set for, you know, the traditional source services, and now even a third way of billing or measuring for virtualized services. And you can't really start to do that comparison until you get to, a common set of measurements and understandings across services. So that's, when we talk about standardization, it's definitely much more than just the, you know, standardizing servers, although that's important, and standardizing on the storage.
Yeah, let me drill down on your configuration data comment. It seems to me that moving across cloud service sets, whether it's internal, external, or both, many of the underlying services might be standardized or similar. What's really going to change and be integral to an application activity, a user, a process, is the configuration information about the integration, about the application, the users, access and control, and so forth. Does it make sense then for organizations to get their configuration management acts together now as a precursor, as you would with, say, SOA or standardization around virtualization, as a really important necessary step to take advantage of cloud? I'll throw that to either one of you.
So I start, and then I'll turn it over to Rebecca. I wouldn't want to say that that you have to stop everything you do and re-architect your a CMDB that cuts across everything. But hopefully, if people have been following and implementing ITIL for the last couple of years, they have a good majority of the data. They have, you know, most people at this point have a configuration management database or configuration management system that federates from different data sources. It is important if you want to measure from the service and you want to understand your options of, you know, insourcing, outsourcing, again, that you have that set of data. If you have it federated or in a single repository, you know, with common measurement, it makes that job much easier and it makes you more agile. And if you don't, then you have to rely on the human factor to pull all that information together into a common report, come up with common measurements and, you know, methodologies, and that takes time, and that introduces human error. So it is possible to do without, but that possibility means more expense, more risk, because you're open to non-compliance and, lower agility.
Yeah, Rebecca, yeah. Perhaps you were including this in your discussion about catalog, but let's just take a quick pause to look at the configuration management issue, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. So when I think about if you start from the catalog, when somebody makes a selection, let's say you choose to onboard an employee, all of the things that have to happen from that point onward need to go and hit change management, CMDB. And the reason you're doing configuration management is really it's at the service of a change, because every time you make a change, whether it's pre-approved or it has to go through the change advisory board, you are exposing yourself to something going wrong. That's why you want change management as a practice, so that you know what configuration items you have, you know why they're important, you know what they're attached to, so that when it is time to make a change, that happens in an organized way and with full transparency. So I sometimes call change management the change in config, actually, the artery system, of because you can't really do anything unless you have the whole system well enough managed so that when a change happens, it's you've got full transparency into what occurs, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Because it's only then that you can either roll back, or you can measure success, or you can replicate success by doing successful changes. So change and config, I think, are just at the heart of the whole equation. And regardless of if you're using cloud services or not cloud services, you should still, every time you make a change to your policies about consuming an external service, that should go through change as well, which then hits config.
Right.
I don't know if that answered your question.
I think it's an affirmative, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, great. We've been learning a little bit more about the roadmap from tactical and virtualization strategies towards more cloud-like benefits and some of the necessary steps and how things can be looked at now with that foresight of, okay, I'm going to want to do other cloud-like activities later, helping us sort through this roadmap for the move from virtualization to cloud computing. We've been joined by Rebecca Lawson, Director of Worldwide Cloud Marketing at HP. Welcome and thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you very much, Dana.
Also, Bob Meyer, Worldwide Virtualization Lead for HP Technology Solutions Group. Thanks again, Bob.
And thanks to you. Thanks.
This is Dana Gardner, Principal Analyst at Inner Arbor Solutions. You've been listening to a sponsored Briefings Direct podcast. Thanks for listening, and come back next time.